The purpose of the survey was to investigate the nature of community-based interpreting from the interpreter's perspective. The questionnaire, we devised, piloted and designed a questionnaire, designed and piloted a questionnaire, which was then sent out around the world through AusIT and PIT networks by email, by fax, and by post. We were asking interpreters, we asked for interpreters who work at some proportion of their time in the community. We asked language, country of residence, years of experience, and whether they belong to an association. We also asked a number of questions about their, in open-ended questions, about their opinions. This is more primitive than PowerPoint, isn't it? So what is community-based interpreting? What we decided as a definition, CBI, and that's the abbreviation I'll use, encompasses any interpreting which takes place in everyday or emergency situations in the community. Possible settings include health, education, social services, legal and business. The study took place in two phases. We first of all did this exploration of the experience of the interpreters working in the community. Then we had a particular look, because it appeared to be an interesting section of the questionnaire, we looked particularly at ethical issues, the responses of interpreters relating to their ethical behaviour and application of the code of ethics. Of course, in other countries, there are codes of ethics. It wasn't just the AusIT code. Now, the questionnaire, apart from the question of the biodata I've mentioned already, it covered a number of themes. I'll just run very quickly through these. Work settings, remote versus face-to-face, working conditions, employer requirements, I don't think I need to put them all through, but basically it was to get the interpreters' opinions themselves on the to get their attitudes on all the other factors like their role, important guiding principles by which they work, attitudes to providing advice, advocacy, and making additions and omissions in interpreting. I've got to run through this pretty quickly, I'm afraid. Thank you. The characteristic of the respondents, we had 92 respondents from 7 different countries, 40 different language combinations, including Canadian Indigenous interpreters, a range of interpreter profiles and settings, and the data pretty much divided into two halves, into factual and opinion. The facts the interpreters could give us about the way they work and their opinions about their own working. One of the questions which came out, which we thought had a very interesting answer, was what are the most important guiding principles for interpreters working in the community? And I'll just quickly run past the AusIT. I'll just put up the AusIT Code of Ethics, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, and it's also on the AusIT website. But those are the general principles as defined by the AusIT Code. We asked everybody in this questionnaire, what are the most important guiding principles? And it was an open-ended question. We didn't give them any clue as to what we expect them to say. It's quite interesting to notice that, if we can have a look at this, at these results, that even with modern technology, it's not always possible to get one word in one line. That second one is confidentiality, and that in fact turned out to be the most important in numerical terms, the one that people mentioned most often. Impartiality and accuracy ran close behind, and others just said ethics. So it's not clear from such a written response what they actually meant, but ethics came up as an important as an answer. And the reason the percentages come to over 100%, of course, is because a number of people answered, gave a number of answers. Now, the other question that I think you might be interested to Oh. Interested to hear about was what do you do if a client asks for advice? And again, because the data was open-ended, we had a huge number of questions written at length, so we had to reduce all this data into manageable categories. So we probably lost something in the process. I don't know how many of you were actually involved. Quite a few OZ members were actually respondents to this survey. But it was extremely hard to categorise effectively the wonderful lengthy answers that we got. But basically, as you can see, 47% of interpreters refuse, when asked to give advice, they said they refuse, and they explain their role again to the provider. And I think we've already been hearing this morning how often the client doesn't understand the role of the interpreter, which is something that needs to be addressed, of course. Another question, which was also an ethical issue, is what do you do if clients ask you to advocate for them? You probably can't read the small print, but the large column, the 62% column, refuse and remind on role. So that's another similar answer, but a higher percentage said they do refuse. And I think this may happen because often clients will be asking outside the actual interpreting context. I guess we also found, as you always do with questionnaires, that questions are ambiguous, and we have no way of telling, without getting back to all the respondents, exactly how they interpreted that question. But I think we concluded, since that percentage is a bit higher, that probably it's to do with them having been asked outside the actual interpreting session for advice. Harry, how many minutes have I got left? Oh, good. So the next question was, or the one that we're going to look at, I'm looking at only four of the 36 questions that we asked, because I've only got 10 minutes. And this was the question of, do you ever add or omit? Before I put that slide up, I was going to ask everybody to answer that one. Do you ever add or omit? Does anyone never add anything to their interpreting?
I don't admit to it.
Sorry?
I do it, but I don't admit to it.
You do it, but don't admit to it. Okay. Yeah.
Shouldn't you first ask, do you know?
Yes.
Do you know what?
Whether or not you add or omit.
Oh,
are
sure.
Are you competent to judge?
Yeah. Well, do you consciously? Okay. Well, rather, perhaps I'll move on because I've started something here and I better keep going and take questions at the end or whenever I have the opportunity, if you don't mind. But you'll see the second column, the 54%. People may or add or omit depending on the setting and the circumstances. And again, a number of respondents gave us examples of what sort of circumstances they would add or omit information. And that, of course, is very open to interpretation. Do you know whether you're omitting or adding? I'm run through this incredibly quickly, so I'm probably not covering it as comprehensively as I could. But just to summarise the findings, the Code of Ethics and the Code of Practice is an important reference for professional practice. This was confirmed by the respondents. And we're only talking about a sample. We're not claiming this is all community-based interpreters, and probably the people we missed, who are the most significant, would have been a significant part of the sample, are those who don't belong to associations, who didn't get to know about the survey. In the long run, we're looking on this as a fairly comprehensive pilot study. We had a number of countries where we didn't get any responses at all, and that actually can be rectified if we move on with this study. We've got much better networks now. I guess the last point is that it's certainly clear that there is a tension for interpreters between the formal code of ethics, which is which are based on the principles on which they should practice their interpreting, the tension between that and the actual situation, job by job, as to how they handle ethical dilemmas as they come up. So I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.